Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano or pick up bass guitar. Or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So, try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of the draft countdown for the inside linebacker position. Joining me for that is Josh Reed. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Back for another episode.
Always fun doing these. I love these shows. Love prepping for these shows. I mean, there's just some of the most fun content of the year. Well, we had broadly different set of names in the bottom half of the top 10. In fact, we got 10 through 7 in the first half of the shows, which is what we've been cutting it off, and then doing the top 6. We know we'll have more overlap at that level. But why don't we just go through who your 10 through 7 guys were, and then on my 10 through 7 guys.
Yeah, I think we only had like one player that was on the same. So I had at number 10, I had Kane Madrano from UCLA, Colin Oliver, who's the edge off-ball linebacker hybrid from Oklahoma State, Kobe King from Penn State as my number 8 guy, Teddy Buchanan from Cal as my number 7, and then Danny Stutzman from Oklahoma as my number 6.
All right. So number 6 happened to be my number 10, which was one of the overlaps. And I had Cody Lindenberg at number 9 from Minnesota, Jay Higgins of Iowa at number 8, really good coverage linebacker, Cody Simon of Ohio State, kind of jack of a lot of trades, decent coverage guy, can make some tackles for you, a guy who's certainly played in the biggest games. But he was off of entirely off your list too. So it's always nice when we have a little bit of difference of opinion here. We're clearly not working for different perspectives on the players, you know, making independent choices about who's good and whatnot. I always like that. But we'll move on. Your number 6 guy was Stutzman. So you've already gone number 6. So I guess I'll move ahead with my number 6 guy is the first today. And that's Barrett Carter of Clemson. So 6'0", 231, a 4.63, 40. He will turn 23 in October. So he's a little old. He's probably okay, just in kind of a normal age for this. But there are some younger guys at the inside linebacker position. He's got below average testing pretty much across the board other than that 40. But he was a Butkus finalist despite having quite an off year. And we'll get to that in just a second. The metrics that I typically present, his stops to missed tackle ratio was still quite good at 4.6, 46 stops and only 10 missed tackles. So that's that's getting up there in the really good range. There are a few guys that are better than that. We're going to talk about them on the rest of this show because all of them are higher on my list. His coverage metrics not as good, 8.4 yards per target. That's not disastrous. Kobe King had a more than 3 yards per target more than Barrett Carter, for example. But Barrett Carter allowed 131.6 opposition passer rating, which was the worst of the draftable linebackers. And he's been a better coverage player, by the way, prior to 2024. But last fall, he gave up 5 touchdowns. So that was not a good year for him. And that's a problem. What I do like about him, I like him more as a thumper. He is a really good block shedder, one of the better ones in the inside linebacker group. It shows up in terms of his stops to miss tackles, and it shows up probably more for him because his missed tackle number is fairly high. He's got a 13.8% missed tackle rate career, but he's got 10 missed tackles this last year, which is it's probably a little bit on the high side for an inside linebacker at the college level, but he had 46 stops, which is a lot. And there was another player who had more that we talked about in the first episode. I think that's Stutzman, but Carter, to have a good relationship between stops and missed tackles when your denominator is pretty high is a good thing. So really big through the hips tackler, definitely a guy who goes directly through the midsection of the opponent, and he gets a lot of not twist down tackles, but drive back tackles. Love to see that in inside linebacker. That's how you stop short yardage football a lot of the times if they're foolish enough to run at the gap covered by him, and he's been very good at that. For the Ravens, I think he'd project as a 2-down inside linebacker who'd be replaced in the dime if he plays Will, and I'd also see him as a guy who could replace Roquan if there was an injury. So, you know, the Ravens need that guy. They don't have that guy currently on the roster. And we talked about the Ravens' needs in the first episode as well, but he's one of the guys that I think could do that. They could also go to the street for it, but Barrett Carter, pretty good choice.
Yes, I actually have Carter on my list, so we have some overlap here. He was actually my number 4 guy, so we can skip my number 4 when we get there. But he's a guy that had a lot of similar notes as you. I love his stopping power as far as when he stands guys up when he does that. He's not one of those guys that kind of gets taken for a ride. He's the one that when he meets you in the hole or wherever he meets you on the field, he's driving you back and not the other way around. So that's an aspect of his game I really appreciated. He's a guy that can, you know, like I said, didn't test well, but he still like flew around a lot on tape. You could tell he was moving freely out there and flowing sideline to sideline. So I like his explosiveness in that aspect as far as moving laterally from sideline to sideline.
All right, fit with the Ravens. Would you similar to what I've suggested, or what do you think?
So I know he gave some plays this year, but I was going back to his 2023 tape, and he, you know, covered backs and tight ends decently well out of the backfield and off the line. So if you can channel some more of that, get some more teaching, you know, have a veteran guy like Roquan Smith, and you know, he'd be reading out of Trenton Simpson, so they could be learning the ropes together.
Do you think he'd push Simpson at all for playing time this year, or do you think that's just a pipe dream that a third-year Trenton Simpson isn't going to get a very long look in 2025?
I don't know. I definitely think the Ravens are going to bring some competition for him, and they're not for Simpson. That is, I just don't know if Carter will be as advanced in his development as Simpson is, you know, heading to year 3 as opposed to Carter coming in at year 1. You know, but if they are on somewhat equal level of footing, then you know, you never know. But it's just like that transition from the college game to the pro game, given that they played in the same defense, right? The same style. The fact that, you know, Simpson's kind of having some of these difficulties making that transition. I don't know if Carter would be any more equipped. Unless he's using Trent Simpson as a resource, then, you know, maybe he wouldn't be equipped.
All right. Outstanding. So I guess we're through number 6 here because Carter was my number 6 guy. So we're at your number 5 guy.
My number 5 guy, I don't know, might make you cringe, man, because he's a little bit on the older side, but my guy is Demetrius Knight from South Carolina. So he's definitely long in the tooth. I mean, the dude legit has a wife and 2 kids, but he comes from an interesting background. He's the cousin of a former three-time Pro Bowl NFL defensive back, D'Angelo Hall. And another cool note, he's the distant cousin of Gladys Knight and Aretha Franklin. I thought that was pretty cool when looking him up. So, you know, if he gets drafted to Baltimore, anywhere he lands, he's going to be singing at the rookie show. They're going to be like, you know, because they're going to bring, guarantee somebody's going to bring that up in one of the meetings. But as far as his play on the field, he has a cool background as a converted quarterback, started his career at Georgia Tech playing quarterback, but he wanted to get on the field, so he converted to linebacker, played some stuff there. But I love the dude's wingspan. You know, he kind of has those that pterodactyl wingspan. I think his wingspan I saw somewhere was like 6'8", and he only has a 6'1" frame. So he's a guy that can you know kind of cover a lot of ground and you know get his hands up in those passing lanes and create pass deflections and stuff like that. So he's a guy that I know is definitely a little long in the tooth, and you know you wouldn't get the as far as optimal like you know, as far as projection, as far as you know, where he'd be, he's almost. I wouldn't say he's tapped out, but because he's still like relatively new to playing defense. But he's a guy that I feel like developed a natural feel for the position. The more he got a chance to play it, and I like the way he uses his eyes to kind of quickly diagnose and work, and then he can also work around blocks pretty well. And when he's moving, he kind of still moves a little bit like somebody who knows where the offense wants to go, because he has that offensive skill player background. So I think he excels at kind of slipping blocks and really allows the offensive linemen to sustain him at the next level. So he's good at kind of shedding blocks and getting around blockers.
All right, great stuff. He's actually my number two guy. And ooh, wow. I have lots of reasons why, but we'll get into it. So size is ideal at 6'2", 235, 458, 40. That's central casting kind of speed. He doesn't need to be any faster than that. Yeah, he has had six seasons of college ball. I let him off the hook for that because there were so many other good things. I had a couple older guys on my list. I wasn't strictly an ageist guy here. He's a faster, a little bit better with all other testing, with the exception of a kind of a low vertical of 32 5/8. By the way, the 464 pound guy from Florida, who had the 25-inch vertical. Did you see this?
Yeah, I saw that.
Okay, yeah. So first of all, incredible, but second of all, somebody was pointing out on a pod that there had been a lot of lower verticals that had been recorded by men that were not nearly as big. So I thought that was funny. Anyway, the thing about Knight that's really special is his coverage. 5.1 yards per target and 65.1 pass rating against were among the best in this class. He allowed 17 catches on the season. Not one of them went for more than 16 yards. So he didn't allow really a true big play at any point the entire year. His stops to missed tackle ratio goes the other direction. He had 2.6 to 1. Only 29 stops is a little bit troubling for a guy who played as much as Knight did. It's 2.5 career, so it's not like he's been a lot better. He's just not a get-in-the-hole kind of linebacker. He's a good downhill player, I would say, and particularly on pass plays, screen pass, swing pass, he's good there, but there are a few too many missed tackles to project him as a plus two down thumper. I think he's a will linebacker. I think you could get him in there and do some good things for you. You might even have him be a sub package linebacker, at least initially, if you didn't think Simpson was doing that role well enough. His run defense has really got to be better than it is right now in his sixth college season, but I liked his pass defense so much that I placed him a little higher in what is frankly a very weak group. What else to say about him? I do have significant current concerns projecting improvement as a tackler, given his age. So that would be probably the biggest concern I've got. For the Ravens, you know, if Roquan were to go down, I think he would be the guy they choose to be a Mike backup, whether that's two or three downs. Could be a three down Mike backup. I don't think he'd get the green dot. I think that'd go to Hamilton, but I think that they could have him on the field for the vast majority of plays. He'll certainly be a special teams player. He could be a chase and blitz player from that will spot the way Patrick Queen was. There is a little bit of an overlap between what he and Roquan does, but Roquan is a much better tackler, and that's, you know, he's just in a different world in terms of his instincts for the game. So it's not a question of that. It's a question of how do you have a backup for Roquan in emergency, and can he also give you something at the will spot? The Ravens may rule him out because of age. I actually like him in this group. And, you know, when I'm talking about what kind of draft capital I think would be appropriate, I think maybe a third round pick would be appropriate for Demetrius Knight.
Yeah, I had him late day three, early not late. I'm sorry, late day two, early day three. Sort of there you go. I can see him kind of coming off the board, you know, towards the back end of the third round. And I think, age aside, I think he kind of screams Ravens guy to me as far as senior ball guy, high character guy. Dude already has a family. And, you know, he has so many of those alluring traits that it's hard to translate from college to the pro game. And, you know, you really like those guys with some of the offensive backgrounds, especially when it comes to, like, having a natural feel for the passing game. I mean, Duke gets great depth when he's dropping his zone coverage. So he's a guy that, because he played quarterback previously, you kind of feel like he kind of knows, you know, has a better, more natural feel. Maybe not always when it comes to, like, you know, route concepts, but as far as the areas of the field where the quarterback likes to go with their eyes. So as a former quarterback, I feel like he has a natural knack for that.
All right. Outstanding. So that's a name we expect this second show to certainly have more of that. So we're up to number five for me, right? Because that was your number five guy, right? So my number five guy, another old guy, Jack Kaiser of Notre Dame. And, you know, it's a mix of not really wanting old guys. He's also a short arm guy, which is going to be a problem for shedding blocks at the NFL level. But he's 6'2", 231, 468. It's an other measurement. Again, we question the validity of the thing. He'll be 25 in September, which is the oldest in the group, as far as I know. Demetrius Knight may be roughly the same age. He had 6 years at Notre Dame, an average 40 time, short arms, and that's about the limit of the bad stuff. Now here's the good stuff. He has 6.8 yards per target in coverage, which is just fine. 101.9 pass rating. That's kind of normal for a linebacker. It's very interception dependent, whether you're over or under 100. So if you make an interception, you get under 100. If you don't, you're usually over 100 because you max out that component of passer rating, which is a fourth of the total, one fourth of the total factor to it. But here's where it's great. He stops to missed tackle ratio. I had 35 stops, which is a good number, and only 5 missed tackles for a 7-to-1 ratio. Not quite the best in the group, but it's fantastic. Only a 4% missed tackle rate career, and 8.5 stops to missed tackles career. So even though he had a great year this last year for Notre Dame, he's been even better for the rest of his career at 8.5 stops per missed tackle. And I think amazingly, that was not quite the very best in this inside linebacker group, but it's right up there. I will say this: last year there was one guy who was over about 7, and that was Peyton Wilson, who ended up going to the Steelers, who was just one of the really great guys for not missing tackles and making lots of stops. Jack Kaiser is one of the guys certainly in this draft, but there are a couple others. Let's see, what else is it? I have to make a joke about this all the time, but he kind of did accumulate his outstanding tackle record as a man among boys. So you got to think about him playing with his grown man strength. He didn't play full time until 2024. Now that's very odd for a sixth year player to never have more than 398 snaps previously. So a lot of his record was accumulated in that final year. I think he's probably a better block shedder than his length would indicate. You had that in your notes too?
Yep.
Okay. And a core special teams player. He'll be much more challenged by athletes at the next level. What guards and centers will be able to do to him climbing will be a completely different experience for him. How he has to sift through traffic, not get lost in the wash, a different experience for him probably. Anyway, may well be a one contract player given his age. For me, I don't really care about that when you're talking about day three picks. If you're talking about a day one or two pick, it's a big no-no. And so there are people who have Kaiser as a day two pick. I have him as a fourth or fifth round guy probably for the Ravens. And Demetrius Knight was higher on my list, and he was a third round guy. But Jack Kaiser for me would be a fourth or fifth round guy.
Yeah, I had him in the same range, high day three pick, somebody, high character guy. I know that the Ravens really like, especially coming from that Notre Dame program. He's a guy that, I had jotted down my notes to one of the more surefire tacklers in this draft. So that's an ability that sometimes gets lost. and overlooked, you know, like cause a lot of times people are like, oh, this guy racks up tackles. Okay, but how many missed tackles does this guy also rack up, especially at this position, man? I mean, the way the league is transitioning now where people are putting more emphasis on the run game, you can't really afford to have somebody who's not reliable, not only in coverage, but at the primary functions of tackling at linebacker. Can't have it.
Now, you mentioned this, and, you know, this is hilarious, I think, but there are a couple sites I use when I'm collecting the metrics for things. I usually use the PFF numbers. So I'm using PFF missed tackles for things, but they don't give you the missed tackle to stop ratio, and they don't put it in a, or stops to missed tackle ratio, and they don't give you yards per target, which to me is incredible. PFF has got to get their head out of their asses and have that on their regular coverage stats for every player. But anyway, the other site that I use for the measurements, because it's one of the best aggregators, is NFL Draft Buzz. It's fine for measurements, and it's good about the source of the measurements. So it tells you, oh, that was an other, that was a pro day, that was done at the combine, and then there's no question about it, you know, in terms of the kind of the validity of the number. If you ever read the NFL, the actual writing for this, it almost looks like it's done by AI would be wrong, but I would more say it's like they have a template that they start with for every single player. And every player is great at everything. So it's like his mother or his coach wrote up this list of strengths for the guy. You look down the list and it's just like, that's not true. You know, kind of thing. And you kind of get upset at the thing. But I will say, if you're ever, you know, want to go through and really get an honest opinion, don't look at the strengths list from NFL Draft Buzz. The mother's review of their fourth grade play performance would be more accurate, I think.
Yeah, I tend to try to make my own assertions when it comes to strengths and weaknesses. A lot of times people are just watching highlights and not actually watching, you know, game by game or, you know, entire games. Because sometimes you don't need to watch, you know, every game from a guy's career, right? But, you know, if you go through certain games and watch, you know, every clip of him from you know, certain games or key games against key opponents. Like, I don't want to watch Alabama versus Citadel, right? Because the guy's going to rack up a bunch of stats. But if I watch Alabama versus Ohio State, Alabama versus LSU, I'll get a good look at, you know, a guy who we're going to be talking about, you know, much, much earlier in this.
And I'd say at the linebacker position, exactly what you're saying is absolutely critical. Every snap tape is the only way to go. There are some great ones out there for tight ends, wide receivers. I haven't seen yet if they have it for cornerback, but just the tape produces every single touch or penalty for offensive skill position players. That's very well done and is an exceptional. It's an exceptional way to look at like tight ends and how they're where they're really getting the pass. What kind of passes are they catching? If you want to look at wide receivers, there's no substitute for it. It's exceptionally well done stuff that I found extremely useful. But you're right. I mean, if I like to watch complete games, and I also like to watch representative complete games. So I may not agree with every component of the PFF grading, but if I am looking at a particular game, I either want to look at a game that was particularly challenging for the player, like you kind of mentioned, or I want to at least look at a representative game, something that wasn't his best game of the season that might show some of his strengths and weaknesses by looking at every play. And I love the fact that you mentioned that, because it's, you know, how you watch tape and how you put together your draft analysis here is so important in terms of getting a meaningful gauge on players.
Absolutely.
All right. So your number four guy, I think, was
Barrett Carter.
Barrett Carter. There you go. Okay. So my number four guy is Jeffrey Bassa of Oregon. A lot of things I liked about him, and he's in some ways he's just average, but a lot in some other ways he's very good. 6'1", 232, 463, 40. He'll turn 23 in September, so I'm not totally concerned about the age thing. Has a really plus athletic profile, except for a puzzling 734 three cone, which is in the 16th percentile. I'm not sure if he got hurt or he slipped or something went wrong on the trial. So I'd really have to look into that more, and I didn't do that. He's one of the probably the older inside linebackers in the draft class, but certainly not as old as Kaiser or Knight or some of the other guys we've talked about already on these two shows. Coverage metrics are okay, 7.7 yards per target, a 110 opposition passer rating. Again, that's going to be interception based. I don't believe he had an interception this last season. Stops to missed tackles are 3.6 to 1. It's kind of a low number in both cases in his case. That's okay, but it's not the ideal situation. Definitely one of the things you see is him making all the adjustments in the middle of the defense for Oregon. It's there's no doubt about who the director is on that Oregon defense. He took a step back in coverage in his senior season. He had three interceptions between his sophomore and junior years, and he took a step back with that 7.7 and 110. And I didn't put that as career numbers. I probably should have done that, but he certainly had been better in coverage before that. A little short-armed, which means he profiles more as I think a roaming and chasing will, maybe a blitzing guy, plays more passing downs, provides blitz value. The guys who in Ravens history have done that, Danelle Ellerby, if you go back a few years, would be a good guy who was kind of a second and 10 and a third down inside linebacker a lot, whereas McLean was often in there on the early downs. Queen did play every down, but he provided more as a chase and blitz guy than he did in terms of a coverage or a run stopper. Let's see, what else do we want to say about this? Good sideline to sideline speed when he's allowed to roam. So I think that's something you could look for in the will spot would help. His coverage is fairly sticky. Now, he had he didn't have any interceptions last year, but he did have a forced fumble on a reception versus Purdue. He is a converted safety. So he's a guy who brings you some of that knowledge of what's happening behind him without actually having to see it. So you often like that. Now, Trenton Simpson also is supposed to have that, and we haven't really seen so much of that yet in these first 2 years. So there would be a concern there. I think he's a guy, if Simpson does not work out, he could be a three-down will. He could allow the Ravens to go without a dime. He could be the passing down alternative to a dime if the Ravens come up short on safeties again. By the way, there's no excuse for that, for the Ravens to come up short on safeties. They got lots of time to figure out, who they could get. But the way it would fail is if they come up with another guy who's like Eddie Jackson last year that doesn't really fit a role that they need him to play. So one thing I'll say is if the Ravens do draft Bosa, and I think he's probably a fourth-round guy, then they have probably lost faith in Trenton Simpson in terms of where he is. I don't think they're going to make that switch with any higher than a fourth-round pick, but that's where I would have him.
Yeah. At every turn, they're giving Trenton Simpson a vote of confidence. Whether it's the, they haven't been alive lunching yet, but Harbaugh last week, at the combine, they talked about it. I mean, I think Harbaugh going.
If you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line up of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis, so you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies, and let me tell you, takes about 15 minutes, and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are Epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Should GLP-1 weight loss medication like Wegovy and Zepbound cost thousands of dollars? We don't think so. Try LifeMD.com helps provide insurance access to the leading GLP-1 medications. Visit TryLifeMD.com and check your eligibility for GLP-1 medication with copays as low as $0. Listen to Bridget's story after losing 55 pounds and using her insurance for coverage.
LifeMD helped me get covered with my insurance. Finding out that it was covered was huge. I've lost 55 pounds. I am so much healthier now that I've lost the weight. I would never be able to do it without them.
Get started today and check your eligibility for GLP-1 medication with copays as low as $0 at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
As far as the saying that they expect him to regain his starting spot, at least as far as early downs, kind of speaks volumes to where they kind of envision him this year. And I think they understand too that, you know, this position, you know, it's not like other positions where, like edge, where you can just kind of come right in and just, you know, kind of be put in a rotational role, real simplistic. You know, just like having that knowledge of knowing and that building an understanding of route concepts and what's going on behind you, just kind of having that natural feel, it takes time to build up. And that's why you see like a lot of guys and veteran guys kind of being prioritized in free agency. Sometimes, you know, you get guys like Oren Burks and guys getting bigger than expected contracts. Guys like Drew Tranquil from the Chiefs, you know, guys, you'll see those veteran guys kind of get broken off a little decent piece of chunk of change because teams value the experience because they know it kind of takes more marinating at that position in particular than it does at others.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm projecting we're going to have some differences at the top here that are going to be very interesting. So you had, who did you have at number four? You had Bear Carter, right? And I had Jeffrey Bassa. So we're up to your number three guy. I'll be interested to see if I think you must have this guy in your top three, but let's who do you got?
I got Chris Paul from Ole Miss?
Ole Miss, yeah.
Yeah, Chris Paul from Ole Miss. You know, the guy that started his career at Arkansas and was a key piece for the Rebels defense this past year. You know, he lacks ideal measurables. I feel like he makes up for and then some with being very instinctive, which kind of allows him to play faster than even some guys who are more gifted than him when it comes to athleticism. So he's the kind of guy that kind of jumps out more on tape than he does as far as his traits. But I think he works around blocks pretty well. You know, rather than just, you know, taking them on at times, he can work around them. I think he can read a quarterback's eyes really well and has a good understanding of kind of like where he's better at spot dropping and zone coverage than he is, you know, lining up, you know, man on man. But he's also a good blitzer too. So he's a guy that had like 3.5 sacks last year, 11 tackles for loss. So he's a guy that I really like as far as that weak side spot.
All right. It's very good. I have him also at number three. Like him for a lot of reasons, but there's one even better than that you didn't mention here. The problem with Chris Paul is arm length. He's 29 and 7/8 inch arm length. So block shedding is going to be a challenge for him at the next level. He's been a very good run defender. And in particular, his stops to missed tackle ratio is off the charts at 13.5. That's the highest I've ever seen. 54 stops, which is an outstanding total, and 4 missed tackles, which is an outstanding total.
We can work around those blocks. Like, what do you makes up? What he lacks for an ideal measurables? That's, I didn't say the arm length thing. I just said ideal measurables. He makes up for with his instincts and ability to kind of maneuver around some of those things.
All right. Well, fair enough. It tops the class by a wide margin. That his career is 7.0, which is fantastic. Missed tackle rate of just 7.6%. So he's a guy who certainly. Whatever shortcomings he's got, I would agree that he makes up for it by getting to the spot very effectively. He has an ability to mirror and run with running backs that I think is going to be good enough for the next level. It's one of the things you really get excited about when you watch him on tape. 7.0 yards per target career, but that breaks down as 9.1 yards per target in his career with Arkansas. And last year, let me just get this right. Well, 230 yards and 33 on 33 targets. That actually looks like 7.0. Yeah, it does look like 7.0. So he was worse than that anyway before. Yeah, he's 9.1 yards per target before. 7.0 last year. That's what it is. Okay. So some improvement there is nice to see. I would have some fear that as he plays at the next level, the additional quarterback accuracy is going to expose his length on some crossing routes in particular. Anything where he needs to reach across the body of the receiver is probably going to be a problem. I don't think I'll have a problem with running backs, but I think it'll be a problem or coming downhill, but it'll be a problem on tight ends and wide receivers that he has to trail cover or reach across the body at all. Realistically, I think he's probably a year two starter, even though I've got him number three on the list here. I think Will linebacker is his only possible NFL position. I don't think he's a Mike. He'd have, the possibility he plays on an emergency basis in year one, but I don't think that the Ravens would put him there to start off. He's an alternative to dime usage in 2025. He'd be a guy that you could put on the field on third down. You really want him there more as a tackler, but he can also tackle people short of the sticks. Mm-hmm. So if you have quarterbacks who are forced to throw short of the sticks, he's a guy who can get that ball carrier on the ground. So that's where I liked him. In a lot of ways, it's his playmaking ability and a lack of missed tackles that really make him the attractive prospect.
Yeah, I'm lockstep with you, man. And he was a guy that I really enjoyed watching in preparation for this episode.
All right. So we're up to your number two guy, and we've already gone through my number two guy, but who's your number two guy?
My number two guy is, who is it? Carson Schlesinger, another guy who's, I love his background. I always love the former walk-on guys. I know he only had 1 year of starting experience this past year, but it was a sensational year. He's a guy that tested off the charts as well. But I think the Ravens like guys like this, and just given the fact that he kind of had to work his way up on the depth chart through special teams, earning his stripes there, so he'd be familiar with that. He's definitely a gifted athlete as far as playing with physicality, plays real fast side on the sideline. He's a really effective blitzer and is adept in coverage too. I think he has a nice combination of both instincts and kind of understanding blocking schemes as far as where the ball is going. His pursuit, backside pursuit isn't the best, but I think his prayer recognition allows him to play a little bit faster than just, regular click and close. He's a guy that, I don't see the Ravens, spending a first round pick on. There's only one first round linebacker, I feel like, in this entire draft. And I think we all know it's going to be next, but he's a guy that, the Ravens could, target in like a trade back scenario. Maybe I don't think he's going to last until 59. Just, like I said, given some of his pedigree and what he showed this past year, but he's a guy that, definitely a day two guy to monitor. I like Carson Schlesinger.
I appreciate your love of the guy. Okay. I dropped him entirely out of my top 10. Okay, and I guess we knew this was coming because, we already named my number two guy. I had some reasons for it. I wouldn't be unhappy if they got him with a day three pick, but I would not be excited about getting him on day two, not in the second or even in the third round, honestly. I think there's just too many holes there. 6'2", 242, got the very good size. 470, 40 is slow, and that's an other rating, so he's probably slower than that. Don't have an age on him, but he's been in college for a good long time. He had a decent vertical, so that wasn't the problem, but 20 bench rips for a short arm guy at 31.65 is not good. He's a team captain. He's a bioengineering major at UCLA, so I don't think we're going to have a problem picking up the playbook. I don't think that'll be the problem at all. Mm-hmm. But he had only 1 year of the last three as a starter, 7.2 yards per target, 100 passer rating against. He's okay in terms of stops to miss tackles at 4.6. Actually, that's pretty good. But he has a thin frame, and he has trouble shedding blocks, which immediately make him only a Will and not a Mike, where he has spent a lot of his time already. I think he's just a special teams player in 2025. Now, there's a lot of guys who fit into that category as well, including some of the higher players. But when I look at him, there's most players in the top 10 have flaws. And I just thought that Carson had a flaws across the board. He has flaws about his size, not in terms of the height and weight, but in terms of his frame, is kind of a lean frame. In terms of his athleticism, there's not a whole lot of testing in total. The source of that 40 is a problem. There's questions about why he didn't get on the field earlier in his career. So obviously there were reasons for that. You mentioned the walk-on thing. Actually, wasn't aware of that, but that's interesting. Functional strength, I think, is a real question in terms of what he does on the field. And there are potential problems that the Ravens will certainly look at. Now, if he's drafted on day three, really anywhere, I'd be fine with it. Even if they went up as high as, a fourth round pick for him, I'd be okay. I just really would not be excited. I think the Ravens have other needs. And I think that if we're talking about pick number 91, even, I just really would not be excited about him coming off the board. And if he does come off the board before then, he's one of the players that I'm like wiping my brow and saying, phew, at least the Ravens weren't tempted to take him, with a slightly later pick. And I had about one of those at every position. And it's not the guy's a terrible football player. He's not. It's just, I think there's a lot of questions about who he is. And I think other people I see more obvious fit into the Ravens defense than Schlesinger. So not a terrible player, but I respectfully dropped him to the honorable mention category at number 12 on my inside linebacker list.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it's a different structure for different folks, man. I love the guy's story, and I feel like there is something a little bit untapped there. Sometimes people kind of get the bugaboo, like, oh, well, you're in college this long. How come you didn't break through? But sometimes the opportunity just doesn't materialize itself for people, and that's why you see guys like Teddy Buchanan. Not that he didn't get his opportunity at UC Davis, but sometimes when you do get opportunity, some guys go to different places to find opportunity. Carson Schlesinger stayed at UCLA and earned his opportunity. So got a lot of respect for that. And I don't anticipate the Ravens drafting him just because of where he's projected to go. I think he's going to be one of the guys that goes in between, pick 30, whatever. And I think he's going to be gone before they're on the clock at 59. So I don't think we have to worry about it. It's just, some guy I did like watching. And I think there's something there that he could be some untapped potential there. Yeah.
All right. Well, fair enough. He had 101 total snaps at UCLA prior to 2024. So there is a, I think there are questions there. All right. Well, our number one guy is the same. Why don't you start off with him?
Yeah, Jahad Campbell, man. What can I say about Jahad Campbell, man? He's the guy can he's the total package as far as what he could bring to the table for the Ravens as a weak side linebacker. I mean, I don't know if you're aware of his medical situation at the moment. He's a guy that probably wouldn't be able to put his Trenton Simpson right away because he's recovering from a torn labrum that he recently underwent surgery on coming out of the combine. He's a guy that I feel like can do it all. Just he doesn't have I don't feel like he has the best instincts, but he's so damn athletic that he can make up for everything on the field, man. I mean, he's just a guy, a great blitzer, one of those guys that some people even project as a 3-4 outside linebacker because he can do so much for anybody who takes him. He's a guy that could go in the top 20 easily. That could also drop to the Ravens at 27. So he's a guy that I wouldn't be mad about either way if the Ravens take him in the first round.
He's far and away the standout at the inside linebacker group. And so he's still my number one guy, but he has a huge medical flag. And that's, I think he loses this year developmentally is my guess that he could be back in December and whatnot. Honestly, if the Ravens drafted him, I'd want them to stick an NFI on him. And since the thing happened at the combine, it's the same as the Voorhees situation and they could do that. And it might even be, I don't think he's draftable in the top 15 anymore. I think he's long gone from that. He's probably gone from the first round. And I think whoever drafts him, they're going to have a very tough discussion about what his situation is, because he's going to probably be NFI'd for that first year. And he's going to be back in 2026. Now that, not whoever drafts him, because there's some team that won't mess with an NFI designation. They'll say he's too good. He'll be here for 5 years anyway with the fifth year option. And so we're not worried about getting value out of the guy. I'd be tremendously worried about anybody who has a medical like his. But enough on that. The Jahad Campbell, the player, is an unbelievable talent. 4:52 40, 235 pounds, 6'3". His 40, his 10. His broad are all in the 90th plus percentile. His coverage metrics are outstanding, 5.7 yards per target, 87.5 opposition passer rating. His stops to miss tackle ratio is the second best behind Chris Paul in the group, 9.3 to 1, 65 stops I believe that's the highest number in the class because there's no reason for anybody to have more. But he did have seven missed tackles. So the 9.3-1 ratio is fantastic. Very great speed and instincts, very polished tackler, drives through tackles. You know, we mentioned guys who are stickers and guys who are twisters. He's definitely a stick guy.
Echoing your sentiments, man. I'm not sure how much you know about torn labrums, but his recovery is kind of like, you know, really depends on the guy. Because I know personally, I've had a torn labrum bench pressing one time, and so I was in a sling for a few weeks, and you know, couldn't bench press for a while. But it's something that, you know, it's kind of like depending on like how your body and also the degree of the tear too. So the fact that it required surgery kind of, you know, scares me off a little bit, but you know, it's one of those things where, like, you know, especially with these guys with the modern medicine at the NFL level, man, I mean, people can do heart surgeries without even cutting you open nowadays. So you never know what kind of surgery or what kind of rehabilitation program he's on, but he's a guy that, you know, could still put, he's definitely going to miss offseason program as far as OTAs and minicamp and all that kind of stuff. But I read somewhere that he could potentially be back for training camp at some point.
I'm also working through rotator cuff problems myself right now. And I know what it feels like in order to lifting my arm and whatnot is a problem. I don't know how seriously it's torn, but people my age, a lot of men have torn rotator cuffs to some degree, and they just live with it at some point. You get a little bit of weakness in your arm and you kind of deal with it. In Campbell's case, I just think the Ravens are going to look at him and say, we can't have another David Ajabo situation. We love this guy. You know, he's a top 10 talent. He drops into the second round and he's available at number 45. You make the same thing. If you did decide to do that, Jahyd Campbell's got to go on NFI for the year. I don't see any way. You're going to lose that year developmentally. He's going to be around the building. You can still weight train and kind of rehab and do the things he can still do during that period. Go to the classroom or being a very big one, but he's got to be NFI'd for the year. I don't see a way that he comes back and is effective this season. So anyway, a few more things that I just loved about his coverage drops are good. Lots of experience with two deep shells, so that's nice. You want a linebacker who knows how his safety is going to help him from behind and really has a good understanding of that. And that's certainly, the Ravens use a two deep shell a lot of the time. He also, because he's so good, he gives you the option to use a two deep shell in terms of not bringing up another safety to run fit when you've got Jahyd Campbell. All the speed you could want in a spy. You want to talk about modern NFL quarterbacks and their opportunity to escape the pocket. He's a guy you'd want there. He's frequently asked to drop from the line of scrimmage at Alabama. Now, okay, this is the reason I'm bringing this up. Ravens use all this A-gap simulated pressure. Okay, that's something that was also done at Alabama a fair amount. And he's all the fast you need to do it. I thought they were really disadvantaging Roquan last year in particular to have him doing as much of that as they did, really disadvantaging him in coverage. And Campbell is a guy I think won't have any problem dropping quickly, making his move off the line of scrimmage from that A-gap. Sometimes you also want to show a little hand movement, a head fake, or even a touch to that guy opposite you to take that opposing lineman out of the play. I think Campbell still has the recovery speed to make up on that and be a shallow zone defender coming out of that. I never liked the idea of that guy dragging a seam directly after dropping from the line of scrimmage, but I do like the options that you could have as a shallow zone defender coming out of that. His block shedding was okay. I don't think he was top of the world in terms of block shedding, but he's a great athlete, that's for sure. No serious weakness that can't be mitigated with additional coaching and additional strength at the NFL level. The only problem is this medical flag. The Ravens won't have a chance to take him under any circumstances, I don't feel. At 27, I don't think they'll get the chance at him at 27. They very well might, but I don't see a way that they'll do it if they have other options, like say at Emenwori or Jadae Barron, or two guys that I really covet at that spot. Maybe an edge that they like. I don't think it's an inside linebacker at 27. And I think by the time they get to 59, more than likely he's gone. You know, Miles Jack and some of the guys who had serious injury issues coming out of college. Linebackers. Say again?
Jalen Smith, yeah.
Jalen Smith, another good one. So those guys end up being second round picks more than likely. So, you know, Jahyd Campbell, unfortunately, it cost him a fair amount of money to have this injury. That's just the nature of it. I think he can still be a good NFL player. I don't see any reason why not. But, you know, the year of development loss and the year of play loss is just too significant to not put a pretty significant round penalty on the draft. Or, you know, if you want to express it in JJ points or something, it's probably a loss of, you know, 1,000 or more JJ points from being in the top 10 to being somewhere in the second round for him. So tough break. And the team that drafts him is going to have to be very aware of exactly what they're getting themselves into.
Yeah. When it comes to the development thing, you know, like linebacker, even though it's the quarterback of the defense, it's not with a position like quarterback where you can sit for a year and learn behind the scenes. It's one of those things where you need on the job training. Yeah. You're never going to get a developer that natural feel for the NFL game as far as passing concepts or anything like that, unless you're out there in the fire. Now, Patrick Queen was trial by fire, but, you know, being able to have a guy like Roquan Smith next to you, if he were to be drafted by the Ravens, and being able to kind of learn on the fly like that, and, you know, just kind of having that hands-on opportunity is something that would be greatly missed if he were, but drafted by the Ravens, had to miss any significant amount of time.
Yeah. All right. What spot, and let's assume you're trading back maybe in this draft from 27, and you're picking up, you know, a second and a third or something for in exchange for that 27 pick. What spot makes Jahad Campbell affordable? Assuming, are you a guy who says wait till 59 and draft him, or are you a guy who says go ahead and draft him at 27, or do you want him somewhere in between?
Somewhere in between. I wouldn't take him at 27. It's because, like, I know the Ravens have 11 picks in this draft, but most of those are on day three. So I think the more picks you can have on day two, the better. So I'd take him anywhere, you know, from, like, you know, if you're trade back just outside of the first round in like the mid 30s, that'd be, you know, acceptable to me. But he's not going to make it at 59. So, I mean, there's going to be somebody who's going to take a chance on him between 33 and, I say, like you mentioned, 45 or so. I don't think he's making it to the 50s.
All right. Well, you know, Ajabo made it to 45, and he was thought of as being a wonderful prospect. Now, the injuries are a little bit different, but in terms of the recovery time, you know, 6 to 8 months was, you know, what I'm hearing. If that's really true, that could be anywhere between September and November. Effectively, the season will be lost if that's true. If he truly can't resume football activities until the season has already begun, I think he probably is lost for the season in terms of this. And I think, honestly, if you're spending so much draft capital on the guy, you pretty much have to NFI him to do that. And that's something players will not like at all, but that's why you have to have that conversation in advance with somebody like Campbell.
Agree.
All right. I just incredible pleasure doing this with you. Is there anybody else you would have? I had one other guy that's an honorable mention that you didn't come up with because we overlapped each other's lists a lot. But I had one other guy that I kind of liked. Did you have anybody else from your honorable mention list you want to mention?
Other than Nick Martin from Oklahoma State, that was it.
Oh, that is a good one. Smile Mondon of Georgia is the guy I liked as well. And I won't go into any real depth in him, but 6'2", he's a little bit smaller at 224 and a 4.58 40. Coverage metrics, 4.9 yards per target allowed this last year, and also had a stop to missed tackle ratio of 7.7 to 1, 23 stops, which is actually a little low, and 3 missed tackles, which is exceptionally low. But his missed tackle rate has improved over the years, and the best coverage metrics in the class, third best in the stops to missed tackle ratio. I really liked. Not ideal size and length for shedding blocks, but he should be a good special teams player. I think he'd really help the Ravens. Could be a Will who's ready as early as 2025, and more than likely a 2026 guy if Simpson doesn't work out. But anyway, that's what I thought about him.
Yeah, cool.
All right, Josh, tell folks where they can find your work online or talk to you if they want to.
Yeah, you can always talk to me online on Twitter at JoshReed907. And as far as where all my Ravens content is, you can find that at Ravens on SIs, the Baltimore Ravens affiliate for Sports Illustrated. And you can find all my Ravens content there. You can always hit me up on Twitter.
Outstanding. We're looking forward to having you on draft night as a panelist. Again, we'll talk a little bit after the show and see when you want to be on and whatnot, but it's always so much fun to watch the draft with you. And hopefully we get you on for some of day three, you know, because the Ravens have 8 picks there. Sometimes people get a little long in the tooth. They're not as excited about the players in the later rounds. Maybe it's a little out of their depth in terms of who they actually know about in college football. I know sometimes that's the case with me, that the guys who are drafted on day 3, like Nick Samak, is not somebody I knew anything about before he was drafted. You know, you have to start scouting that guy at that point. But there's so many picks, and there's still some guys you think are, why hasn't this guy been drafted? And there's usually a reason, but I find day 3 to be a lot of fun. But please join us for that. It's a great group activity. You can listen to the pod if you want to. It's a lot of hours of total content, but it's more fun to come in and actually participate in the pod. We'll take questions. We'll do all sorts of things and work on a spreadsheet together to get a visual on the remaining available players by position group that would be exciting to draft. Josh, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ken, like always.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply.